following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Welcome to the 8th episode of Create Your Shot. This week we have Eric Hamford from Future 150 in the studio. Smalls and I talked to Eric about what it's like to be the national scouting director for a youth basketball service, as well as an event operator. We talked to him about how to get better as an evaluator, learning from your mistakes as a scout, your relationship with coaches, players, and AAU coaches, from kind of being and acting like the middleman in these situations. And then finally, we talk a little bit about Eric's life and how he's gotten to where he is now, and understanding that if you know what you want to do right away, then don't necessarily wait. We have a really interesting conversation at the end of the podcast about Eric's college experience and why it was or was not worth it for him. So I really appreciated Eric's honesty and his ability to introspectively look back at his career. And even now, he'll tell you that he hasn't really made it yet, but he's doing what he loves to do every single day, and it was a struggle to get to where he is now and feel comfortable in what he does. But when you believe in something and you believe in what you do, you know, you don't feel like you're doing work. So really appreciated Eric on the podcast this week. Anybody who's looking to get into recruiting or evaluating or scouting, especially at a young age in an industry where young people don't necessarily see success very quickly, this was a great interview. We are doing a giveaway this week. So Eric's favorite book is Fall River Dreams. Spoiler alert. So we're going to give away a copy of Fall River Dreams. The directions to enter the giveaway are in the introduction, but you have to be a follower on social media. So at Create Your Shot on Twitter, at Create Your Shot Pod on Instagram. Other ways you can get in touch with us, Create Your Shot on Facebook and at Create Your Shot Pod at gmail.com. So other than that, please make sure if you haven't done it already, sign the petition to get John Linehan into the Providence Hall of Fame. That is on our social media. And then everything else, you know, as usual, thanks for listening. We're having an absolute blast doing this. Any guests, questions, concerns, suggestions, anything at all, get at us at createyourshot@gmail.com. Thanks as always for listening. Eric Hamford was great this week, and we appreciate everybody taking the time to subscribe and give us a ratings on iTunes. So enjoy this week's pod with Eric Hamford. All right, Smalls, we're back this week with Eric Hamford from Future 150. He's the first evaluator and scout we've had on, although Eric wears a lot of hats as an event operator and, you know, a scout, and they have a scouting service that they give to college coaches, but really a lot of knowledge, especially on the player side of things, like high school players, a ton of recruiting knowledge, talked about his relationship with different coaches. And I thought this one was cool because we got to see sort of the other side that we maybe haven't seen yet from what it's about for basketball coaches, because you got to know these people, right? You have to be able to network as a young coach on the basketball side, but then you've also got to maybe realize that not everybody, like, he wasn't going to be a coach. He didn't want to really coach. He wanted to be an evaluator and be a scout.
Yeah, Eric's a good example of, you know, what the middleman and how important that is between coaches and players. I mean, coaches is, much as they're around and seeing different recruits, you know, Eric's, that's all he does. He's scout. His job is to know everything about, you know, everyone kind of that he sees or comes through Future 150. So to know this guy and to gather pertinent information that sometimes isn't visible is crucial. And that was the cool part for me listening to Eric, is just, you know, what's the interaction like from coaches and how do you kind of deal with them? And then also dealing with the AAU coaches and the players. So again, acting as that middleman, I thought that was pretty neat to see and hear about.
Yeah. And I liked it from a standpoint of, like, when I was in high school, I loved reading like Rivals and Scout and ESPN and, you know, reading about other players and stuff. But I loved it. Like, how about Eric trying to talk about getting better as a scout? Like, we talked about some players he missed on and why. We talked about players he was right, and kind of trusting your gut and getting better at what you do. And you wouldn't necessarily think that that's important. But you see these guys that are national writers. And, I mean, some of them were former players, but a lot of them weren't. Some of them were former coaches, but a lot of them weren't. They got into it young. And so, like, the networking piece of it just keeps popping up in these interviews. And just the passion and the ability to go do things that you want to do. Like, I thought it was totally fascinating that Eric said that if he could go back and give himself some advice, he wouldn't go to college. And obviously, like, you know, we talked with Bobby Jordan about going to college and trying harder in the classroom. But yeah, I mean, it's the same deal. If you hate your job, go do what you want to do. If you want to be an evaluator and you don't want to go to college and you're not worried about missing out on the social side, then, like, those are the things that make these journeys so incredible, is you look back and you decide the decisions that you made and you don't regret any of them. But if you could give advice to somebody else, it's like, man, put all your hard work into it. It's just like if you're a player, right? Like, if you don't need to go to college and you can go play professional basketball right away, go do it. You know, go make money, because part of this side of basketball and this side of sports as a journalist or a scout or a writer or whatever is that you need to be around. You need to build up a following. You need to build up a base of writing. And do you need to go to school to do that? I don't know. Some people do. Some people don't. A lot of people do it because that's what they're told to do. So I thought it was cool that Eric admitted that, you know, the student loan thing has been a hard deal for him while he's trying to make this business work.
Yeah, and I think he made a good point. Like, the way I kind of looked at it was, yeah, you don't have to go to college. If you want to be a scout right away, go try to do it. And what's the harm in doing that for 2 years and saying, hey, I don't really like this. I think school is the right route for me. I mean, you're 18 or you're 20 starting college. It's not much of a difference. It's probably actually a little better. You've got some kind of money underneath you and, you know, you're a little more mature. So I think, you know, to people out there who want to get involved in that side of the business, or maybe it's media in some sort of context, that you can take a year off or take a 2 years off. And it doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm going to go to Europe like some of these kids do. Maybe you try to go be a scout and see how it is and see how much you love it. And maybe you fall in love with it and you never need school. Or you can always go back. And I think giving kids that option and knowing it's out there is really important. And another thing with what kind of you were saying about Eric, and we talked with him, scouts, he's improving, yeah, as an evaluator and talent. But I was actually watching something the other night, and it was just a minute clip of Greg Popovich talking to his, you know, at a coaching clinic or something. And it was more about, I'm looking for the kids who interact well with their teammates, and something Steph Gately talked about. How do they react when they're down? How do they react when they're winning? Do they beat their chest, and or do they have some kind of bravado and they can't handle being up, and talking to their teammates and respecting their coaches and respecting the game? I think that's what separates scouts, and something probably Eric's evolved as he's gotten older. He's looking at, you know, what type of kid is this? Is he mature? Is he immature? And so on and so on. And I think that separates scouts to me. Like, the people I used to talk to, I would ask about that kind of stuff. And I think that's really important information that, you know, coaches want to know.
Yeah, and it is funny. Like, I saw you tweeted that clip. I think Kim English originally.
Oh, did I tweet it?
Yeah, I think Kim English was the one that actually posted it. Former Missouri player who's an assistant at, I believe, Colorado now.
Colorado, yeah.
And that stuff's funny, man, because we talk about it with Eric about how, like, coaches want the players they recruit to just kind of be perfect. But in reality, like, you're not, you know, maybe you get, you know, we talk about Marvin Bagley a little bit. We talk about Michael Porter. Like, maybe you get those guys who are pretty close to perfect prospects, but you don't necessarily know the off the court stuff. And a guy like Eric, he saw Marvin Bagley as like an eighth grader at an event, you know, so he's seen how the kid's grown. He's seen kind of how he's matured. Like, and that's a really valuable guy as a young coach to be able to speak to. And so, you know, all of us have friends in the industry that, you know, were scouts, and maybe now, like, when we have Josh Verlin on in a couple weeks, you know, you meet people in different basketball scenes. And so being being part of that scene and embedding yourself with the people like Eric and with, you know, your Josh Verlins and like Linehan's, John Linehan said this, you can't be bigger than anybody. Like,
yeah,
information
yeah,
is good. And knowing what information is right, like Eric said, like he can't, you know, he won't put his name on something that he doesn't agree with.
Bingo. Can you decipher information? That's the key. Anyone can get information. It's how can you interpret the information? That's what makes a good recruiter, scout, coach. It separates you in any field you kind of want.
And so, like, that's the funny part about, like, event operators in general. And this is one of the things that I, you know, we didn't necessarily talk about this. And as we go further and have some more event operators on, and I kind of peel back the layers on some of our personal history, like, everybody's pumping that these kids played at their events, right? And that this kid is a, you know, whatever, he's an alum of a certain company. And the companies want these kids to succeed because it's better for their brand, okay? But I thought it was amazing that Eric was like, look, when you have kids at dead period events and coaches can't be there, then like they need your information. And so like if you're not honest after a while, then coaches are going to stop going to you. And if coaches don't know who you are, then they're not coming to your events, or they're not trusting you. They're not paying for your scouting service. So this is just an entire cycle of people being able to work together. And I think that's got to be the goal, is that everybody in this business understands that like there's enough out there for everybody. Like you don't need to root against certain people, or you don't need to be like, I'm not going to their events because like they only help such and such a school. Because like in general, like it's not supposed to be about that. And that's where it was interesting to hear him talk about that. That like, you know, coaches will call him and be like, this kid's a great kid. And Eric will have to say like, yeah, this weekend he really wasn't a great kid. Like I've never seen him act like that before, but you need to know that this is the way it is. And then, as long as you can look yourself in the mirror and be like, I gave the right information, then you can feel fine about the product that you deliver, right? You can feel fine in your scouting report saying that Marvin Bagley's a high major plus guy, or, but saying like, I don't know, Josh Smith is a jerk, but he's also a really talented player. And that's where being true to yourself is really important. And that's what I thought we got a lot from Eric, is that there were things that he did and the way that his life is now. And we didn't really dip into it, but I know for a while, like he wasn't sure if Future 150 was going to be viable, but I knew he wanted to give it a shot. I knew that he didn't want to do anything else because he was part of the company from the ground up, and he wanted to get in there and make sure that like, no matter what happens, I'm going to make sure that I give this 100%, and you know, if it works out, then awesome. And so that's part of this. Like, you got to be ready when your break comes. I mean, I tweeted that thing about the Bill Simmons podcast with Masai Ujiri, that he was a volunteer assistant for the Magic after he had stopped playing overseas. And he caught an unbelievable break. For those of you that haven't listened, like, take a listen to it. But when he caught a break, he never looked back. Like, and unfortunately, no matter who you are, if you're, you know, John Linehan, a former NCAA Defensive Player of the Year, or you're Chris Angelos, when your break comes, you've got to be ready to take advantage of it. And when you do that, that's when you eventually make it in the business. And making it means any number of things. This is our eighth episode. We've had eight different people tell us what their career goals are, and they're all different. But like, when you get your opportunity, you've got to be ready. And luck plays a role in it. And understanding that luck plays a part, no matter how hard you work, I think is one of the first things that like allow people to really make it, right? Like it allows people to understand that like I have to work hard, but maybe I haven't been quite as fortunate, so I need to wait until the opportunity to prove that I'm indispensable. And that's where I thought Eric did an unbelievable job, especially with Future 150.
Yeah, your individual journey, or your individual, you know, walk to your goal, that's always going to have, you know, peaks and valleys, but it's kind of remaining laser focused on that goal and making sure that's what you want. And then kind of learning how to deal, you know, at the low points, or, you know, scratching and clawing to make it. And then once you get on top, you know, you keep yourself going, and you still get motivated and wake up in the morning and you love what you do and things like that.
Right. And that's what it is. Like from the interview with TJ Deckmar, where he told us that he was, you know, working at the YMCA with you, or driving the airport shuttle at 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's why he's been successful, because you remember those days. And, you know, he gets in a situation where his coach resigns. He's been a full-time assistant for 1 year, and all of a sudden you're a head coach. Like, that's just how this works. You just have to be ready when the opportunity arises. So that's kind of what I thought the theme of this one was. You know, really fun to hear it from an evaluation standpoint. We talk a lot about like some high school players now, some college players now. We debut a new segment that I think our viewers will really like, our listeners will really like. And this is actually going to be our first giveaway show of the year. So Eric's favorite book, we'll spoil that 10 touches, is Fall River Dreams about Chris Herron. So you need to retweet this a podcast link on Tuesday, and then you also need to tweet us where Chris Herron played college basketball, and we will take the 11th retweet, and we will send you a copy of Fall River Dreams to add to your book collection. So we'll tweet out the directions, but you have to be a follower on Instagram and Twitter, retweet the podcast, and tweet us the two places that Chris Herron played in college, and then we will enter you. The 11th retweet gets a copy of Fall River Dreams. So, Smalls, I think this is, you know, like I said, every week I talk about how much fun we're having, and every week it's even more and more true. This is our 8th episode. At Create Your Shot on Twitter, at Create Your Shot Pod on Instagram, Create Your Shot on Facebook, and createyourshot@gmail.com. Reach out to us. Please rate us and subscribe on iTunes. If you've already subscribed, you can unsubscribe and resubscribe, but leave us some comments. Tell us how we're doing. Tell us what your favorite book is. Tell us what the next book you want us to give away is. We'll take any sort of, you know, advice. Having a great time, and I appreciate everybody who listens, and enjoy Eric Hamford. All right, welcome Eric Hamford. Eric, I know as an event operator and a scout, your time is pretty valuable, but this is a little bit of like the slow time of the year. So are you evaluating? Are you going to a lot of high school open gyms? Like, what have you been doing in the fall?
Yeah, first of all, I appreciate you guys having me on. But yeah, this is our dead season per se. We just got off the road. It's pretty much been, you know, a nonstop, you know, venture from the end of February until now. We closed out our national camp. So I'm taking a few weekends off, and now I get the chance to kind of go out and, you know, I'll check out the Pangos All East camp in a few weekends. I'll do some high school open gym stuff, then I'll do some middle school events and things like that. So I'm going to get to wear my other hat where I'm not, you know, operating the events, and I can kind of let the stress and chaos fall on other people, and I could sit back and just kind of focus on the kids. So this is probably my favorite time of the year.
Yeah, I know that life well, actually. But so for the listeners, they know that you're the national scouting director for Future 150. But can you kind of talk about what Future 150 is and kind of what that encompasses with like the evaluation, the website, the event operation, and kind of all in one sort of succinct way to explain what Future 150 is?
So what we are is, you know, we're an event management company. We run AAU tournaments and exposure camps throughout the year. But we're a hybrid company as well, so we do the national media stuff as well. So my boss, he created this about 10 years ago, doing some of the camps and tournament stuff on his own. And then in about 2010 or 2011, you know, he decided that in order for us to really go to the next level, we needed to kind of do the media along with it. He was a former AAU coach, and, you know, he was racking up thousands and thousands of dollars, taking his best players across the country to some of these camps where they sold you on media coverage, you know, ESPN's in the gym, you know, Rivals is here, Scouts here, but, you know, they can only really write on nationally ranked kids or kids that'll sell subscriptions. So he found that he really wasn't getting his money's worth based on some of these camps that they were trying to sell the product that really wasn't, you know, it was kind of smoke and mirrors. So he decided, you know, I'm going to take this into my own hands and start, you know, a camp series and a tournament series. And I'm going to bring in some media guys to kind of do the media stuff with it. So at every one of our tournaments, we can just kind of cover it ourselves and blow it up and give all the kids and the teams, you know, exactly what they're looking for. And that's kind of when he brought me on around 2011 or so, and I really wasn't, you know, and I mean, I'm still not a name, I guess, but, you know, I had no real.
No. Don't sell yourself short. I mean, especially like, I would say like on the East Coast and on the youth, like 7th, 8th graders. I mean, I think Future 150 is very popular. I mean, much more, I would say much more popular than maybe when I was trying to break into coaching in 2012 or 2013.
Well, it's really been a process, honestly, and it's something that at the time you don't realize, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that really goes into it. So, you know, me, you know, fresh out of college, I was kind of like, well, this is what I want to do. Like, I'll see where it goes. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of peaks and valleys, and it's been a long road, but you know, we really, you know, I think we do a really good job of covering kids, you know, not only nationally on a, you know, a top 150 level like the Rivals and Scout and ESPN and those guys, but we also cover, you know, the other 98%, which is, you know, the mid majors, the low majors, the D2s, the D3s, you know, the kids who have to go to junior college. So, you know, honestly, we're a hybrid company that, you know, we try to do right by everybody, you know, the 100% of the kids, not just, you know, the top 2%. And I know the guys at, you know, 247 and Rivals and Scout and all, they all do a great job, and we try to do that, but, you know, we also stay in our lane on the event side as well and try to do a little bit of everything. So it's been a cool ride since I joined on, but, you know, that's kind of what we're about. And we do about 20 events a year. We do a lot of stuff in the Southeast. We've done some stuff in the Northeast as well. And, you know, we're going to continue to try to grow this thing and see where it goes.
When you were first getting in here and trying to make this a full-time gig, obviously, like, event operation is tough. So is scouting when you try to build your credibility. You didn't end up doing this full-time right away, right? Were you working other jobs while you were trying to make this happen?
Yeah, so with scouting, obviously, it's like a very weird niche. Probably right around the time I was in, like, 8th or 9th grade, right around 2000, and that time is when Rivals became, like, really popular as far as, like, they started ranking the kids and covering all the showcases and that stuff. And I was, like, one of those high school hoops junkies, man. I would come home from school or come home from practice, and I'd be surfing the web looking for what Jerry Meyer wrote about, you know, these top kids at this, you know, tournament in Atlanta. You know what I mean? So it was, like, you don't really go to school for something like that. And, you know, toward the end of high school, I remember I reached out to some people. I think Dave Tellup was one guy I remember who emailed me back and was like, honestly, there's nothing I could tell you to major in that'll get you into this field. The only thing that I can tell you is, you know, get a degree, finish up your school, and then, you know, get in the gym, you know, try to meet as many people as you can. The only way you're going to really break into this is to be in the gym and meet as many people, you know, good people as you can and see where it goes. So I got a degree in elementary education. I realized that really wasn't what I was passionate about. So I moved down south, and while I was trying to, you know, break into, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to do, you know, recruiting. That was what I wanted to do, but I was trying to see if, you know, just anything in sports journalism would pop and I could just find my way in. I was working probably 40 or 50 hours a week, you know, as a server at a restaurant in Charleston, South Carolina. I was doing an internship program, a sports writing internship program with Bleacher Report. I was writing for probably 3 or 4 different outlets, NBADraft.net, Coast to Coast Recruiting, just some of the smaller blog sites, anything that I could really try to plug myself into. So between it all, I mean, as a 23 or a 24-year-old, I mean, looking back on it now, I probably wouldn't be able to juggle all that. It was probably about 90 or 100 hours a week I was putting in between, you know, the job that actually paid the bills and what I was really passionate about and trying to break into. And that's when I met, you know, my boss, Jason Pratt, contacted me, and he was like, hey, I'm starting this, you know, media side to my company, Future 150. I'm looking for somebody to be, you know, a national scout and kind of do the recruiting stuff. And, you know, I'd love to have you come on. And, you know, since I joined there, it's kind of been a wrap. And, you know, I appreciate that, you know, he gave me the opportunity, and some of the other guys who I worked for before that, you know, gave me a chance when I didn't have a name. But, you know, ever since then, it's been kind of crazy.
Something that really interests me is improvement as a scout. It's a difficult thing to kind of, you mentioned it, like, teach, like, you can't really get a degree for it. So how did you continually improve as a scout? Was it more just watching games? I know for me, I was insecure when I started out coaching, and then eventually I grew. The more I watched, the more I saw, I understood a little more. Is there something you did, or maybe something that happened to you, or talking to different scouts that kind of helped you with that?
Honestly, it's an ongoing process. I think, you know, the only way you're going to get better is by experience. Scouting is it's an inexact science where, You know, it's not like you check, you know, four or five boxes on a kid and you know that they're going to be, you know, the next one and done or the next, you know, LeBron or something like that. It's very tricky. So, you know, you're constantly learning. You're looking at guys that you may have been really high on in high school. And then some of them bust and you try to go back and figure out, well, where did I go wrong? What didn't I see then that maybe I can see now? Or, you know, you see the trends of some of the guys you got right and you figure out, well, what's the common denominator between all of these guys who I was very high on and they're successful now. And some of that has to do with the evolution of the game, how the college game is trending, how the pro game especially is trending. So you kind of have to skew your evaluations a little bit on how, you know, these kids project. And the earlier you're trying to project these kids, the harder it is. So it's an ongoing thing. I mean, some of these kids we've had, I mean, that have come to our product, we had seven guys who were future 150 alums who were drafted in this past draft. Some of those guys I had been seeing since they were probably about 14 years old, 13 years old. So, you know, it's a journey, honestly, from the time you first get your eyes on them to, you know, when they're walking across that stage and putting on, you know, the hat of their future NBA team. So it's an ongoing thing. I mean, I try to look at what some other scouts do. I really try to read up a lot on, you know, what some of the, you know, well-versed NBA guys do. I mean, I'm a huge Draft Express guy. So Gavoni and Mike Schmitz, those guys do a really good job of like trying to bring the analytics and some of the new, you know, modern techniques of scouting into it. So I really just try to evolve with the rest of the game and take some of what guys I trust, some of their evaluation stuff, and put it with what I do to, you know, kind of really take it to the next level.
Eric, I'm curious. Obviously, you mentioned the guy, Dave Tellup, who, when all of us were about the same age, as small as you and I were coming up, Dave Tellup was kind of like the gold standard. Like, he was the scout national evaluator. Like, he had his own Carolina Challenge thing. But one of the things I thought Dave did a really good job at was not just focusing what was on the court. I remember so much about Mike Kabongo, a guy who didn't make it, but Dave talking about him getting up early and leading the early bird workouts at NBA Top 100 camp and how much he really liked the fact that like his relationship as a point guard with the other players were good. You've been getting in on players really early. How often is it do you see someone that fails and you maybe saw it coming because you saw things outside of the court or your relationships you built with coaches, you kind of were like, yeah, you know what? He doesn't always do the right things off the court, so his talent isn't quite enough. I mean, how often does that contribute, do you think, to a kid being a bust?
A lot. There's a ton of kids, and you usually can see the red flags pretty early. You know, even in seventh or eighth grade, some of these really highly regarded kids, they don't have the best people around them, or, you know, they're old, they're a double reclass, sometimes a triple reclass.
That's much
and
more
I
popular.
Always, one thing I always do is I get birth dates on every kid, you know, when I first start tracking them. So I try to get that honest answer from them when they're, you know, in seventh and eighth grade before it can kind of be skewed and kind of pushed under the rug by whoever's around them, trying to make them more appealing. You know, you get a good feel for a kid too, because when they're that young, they haven't been trained to answer questions the same way and to do certain things. You really get a look at kind of inside who the kid is when they're young enough that they haven't, you know, been in the media spotlight yet. They're not really sure how this game works. By the time they're, you know, 10th or 11th or 12th grade, I mean, they're used to answering the same, you know, 100 questions over and over. And, you know, their coaches are telling them what to say about their recruitment and how to dodge questions about the academics and, you know, off the court stuff. So, you know, I think you could see a lot about, you know, how a kid is going to end up with his off the court stuff pretty early. And usually the red flags are, you know, they're pretty evident at a young age that I try to, if I see those, I don't write a kid off. I try to never write a kid off because, you know, they are a kid and they have time to kind of reverse and change, but you can see it and you kind of watch from afar and wait to see how it, you know, plays out. But, it's kind of almost like a gut feeling, you know, after you've dealt with some of these kids and the people around them, if he's going to be, you know, a kid that really succeeds at the next level, or how the work ethic is, how serious they take the stuff in the classroom. It's a lot easier to tell than you could, you know, you probably realize.
Was there a guy like that you can think of that you kind of knew before anyone else, maybe a seventh or eighth grader that you kind of saw something in him and other people didn't necessarily, and now he's either a great player at college or maybe in the NBA? Can you pinpoint one of those kids?
Probably one that's, you know, right in my backyard. Lonnie Walker.
Big name drop.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, but Eric, I saw Lonnie Walker as a seventh grader too at a Big Shots event, and he was ridiculous for like a very small AAU team, like out of Reading. And he was 6'2", but an absolute like lightning rod of athleticism. And you can tell when kids are on a different athletic plane.
The thing that's hardest about that is you have so many kids that are really athletic and blessed athletically that's where it gets hard, because you have to try and, you know, pick between those kids on, you know, how are they going to adjust to the high school level, or are they going to improve their jump shot? A lot of these kids are great run and jump athletes. And you see those kids playing above the rim when, you know, they are in seventh or eighth grade. And, you know, Lonnie was definitely one of those kids that was very blessed athletically, but, I got to know his family a little bit back then. And, you know, I kind of was really on the Lonnie train pretty early. And I was, you know, lucky enough that he was, you know, right in my neck of the woods. It took everybody else a little bit longer. Part of that is because, you know, he did play with, you know, a lower market team until, you know, 9th, 10th grade. And then, you know, he still kind of flew under the radar a little bit. He shunned the prep school route and stayed with his, you know, his hometown high school, which he obviously isn't a very popular thing to do in this day and age. Honestly, he's one that comes to mind. There's a ton of kids that, you know, we come in contact with pretty early. Nasir Little, who just committed to North Carolina, he came to our camp in Orlando when he was in 8th grade, I want to say. He was a kid who I had identified before really anybody else knew who he was. He was probably about, you know, 6'3", 6'4", already at the time. Very long, very athletic, but he had a great personality. His family, they were great people. He was very hungry to be very good, always wanted to improve. So when you have a kid who's blessed athletically and you have the indicators of the work ethic and, you know, the great people around him, it makes it a little easier to project them. You know, I want to say that I can take credit and be like, oh, I knew this kid, you know, was going to be a potential McDonald's All-American. And, you know, it was all because of, you know, my eye for scouting. But some of it really is just, you have to weigh in the outside stuff as well. And, you know, he was definitely one of those kids that it was easy to maybe not envision him being a top 20 or a top 10 player in the country. But I think the evolution of the game has helped him too. I mean, the way the NBA is going fits his playing style.
Cause he really actually blew up this past summer. Like I remember, right. He was like, you know, like 30 to 75, which is obviously really good. And then he had a huge summer for one family, right? And all of a sudden he was, you know, a top 10 player in the country because he was just like murdering people as like a matchup.
And obviously he has the great measurables. That's another thing that, you know, we really try to do. Like this year at our camps, we started doing the combine testing stuff where we do the wingspan, the shoe size. And, you know, some people don't realize, but that really is another great indicator on especially the younger kids. You know, you see the kids with the huge wingspans and, you know, the size. We had an eighth grader from Wyoming come to our elite middle school camp. He had size 17 shoes. He's about 6'7". So you can really project a kid like that and say, well, he's probably going to end up in the, you know, 6'8 to 6'10 range. He's got good skill. So like when you add those outside factors to it, and Nasir was one of those kids that he had great measurables. His motor is off the charts. He defends. He's multi-positional. I mean, he fits, you know, I think he's going to be a great fit for North Carolina, and he fits the NBA game and what the NBA game is now. So he's probably one that, you know, me and my staff can say, you know, we were on him really early, and it's, as of right now, it's really trending in that direction that he's going to end up being hopefully a superstar. He's a great kid and he deserves it.
Eric, and I'm sure there are a few of these, but how about a time that you missed on somebody, and why do you think you missed on them?
I think when I have had a lot of kids that have busted in the past, it's because I've been blinded by some of the athleticism. Probably one, I don't want to call him a bust, he's still in college, Shaquan Aaron at USC. I was really, really high on him. I mean, he's, you know, a 6'7", 6'8", natural wing talent. I mean, he could score on all three levels. He was phenomenal at the high school level. I mean, I really envisioned him being, you know, a 1-2 or a 1-year, 2-year and out guy that hasn't panned out. And I think it's because the skills never have caught up to where they needed to be. I think he has a great base of skills, but you know, once you get to the college level, there's so many guys that are similar to you, same size, they can defend you, but what are you doing differently in order to succeed? That at the high school level, the game is so much easier because of your natural ability. So he's one, and probably guys who fit that mold. So I try to be very cautious about, you know, the big wings. Everybody, you know, is blinded by the, oh, he's a 6'9", 6'10", guy you can play on the wing. I mean, that's all the rage, but you really got to make sure that you're careful with those guys on who can really develop and, you know, how good their jump shot is. Can they create off the dribble? Can they score with a hand in their face from beyond the three-point line? So those are the guys who I tend to miss on when I do. So I try to be very cautious, and that's just part of, you know, learning and evolving yourself as a scout. You know, you got to see where, you got to take a look in the mirror and a self-reflection moment and say to yourself, well, you know what, I did miss on this guy, but let me figure out why I missed on him. And when the next guy who comes around who plays similar to him, how am I going to fix that? Or, you know, is this guy going to fall into that trap, or what's different about him that, you know, makes him somebody who probably won't miss?
And I do think with Shaquan Aaron, just so the listeners know, like, you're talking about a kid, like you said, who is, you know, 6'6", 6'7", like super smooth jump shooter, but also really thin. And like when you looked at him, you know, he was obviously, I think he was from California, but he played in Seattle for a little while. So like, I remember him at Reebok camp and people just being like, this is Jamal Crawford. And then you're watching him, and you're like, hold on a second. Like, he doesn't handle the ball. Like he, you know, like Jamal Crawford's a legitimate secondary creator. You know, at this point, you know, his career has been amazing, but like, Shaquan Aaron really wasn't that guy. And I remember him being very hyped because his measurables were just like off the charts. And again, like, you still got to go to college for free. Like, you're getting an education. He's probably still going to play overseas. So you're right, Eric, like, calling him a bust is not fair to the kid, because like 0.4% of like good players make it to the NBA. So like, he's not a bust, but I understand exactly what you're saying. Like, that's a kid that for a while I think was a top 20 kid. And, you know, he probably finished in the 50s-ish. But, like, I remember that. People being so excited, and then all of a sudden just watching him with other really good players and, like, just not that productive. And you sit there and you wonder why. Like, what is going on?
Some of the stuff is outside of your control. I mean, you got to look at, you know, sometimes, or a lot of times, I should say, kids commit to schools and systems that don't fit what they do. And, you know, a lot of times they weren't really in control of their own recruitment, and they get steered to a program one reason or another, obviously, as we all know. So it's like, you know, you see some of these kids, they end up at a school and you're thinking, well, I'm not quite as high on this kid now because I don't really see him fitting well in this system. So that just makes the whole scouting aspect even harder. Now, with some of these one and dones, I mean, you could put them at Florida A&M, you could put them at Alcorn State. They're going to be 20 and 15 and one and done. It doesn't matter. But some of these fringe guys who have a chance, I mean, it's really important on, you know, the fit and how they fit into their system at the college level. And there's just so much that goes into it that's just off the court and out of your control that just makes it difficult.
So my question would be about that. Obviously, you are an evaluator and an event operator, but coaches, college coaches, are constantly talking to you, and kids are probably talking to you too as your credibility's really grown. How often are coaches reaching out to you, and how do you stay neutral? You know what I mean? Like, I could imagine, like, how do you stay neutral if a kid's saying to you, like, you know, Eric, what do you think about, I don't know. We'll just go a place that's near and dear to my heart. Like, Eric, what do you think about my player going to Temple? Or a Temple coach calling you and being like, Eric, what do you know about player X? So how do you stay neutral as you build relationships?
I think that's the key aspect, honestly. You have to stay neutral. Obviously, we come in contact with a lot of these kids. Like I say, I'm building relationships with these kids when they're 13 and 14. So you really get to enjoy a lot of their personalities. But at the same time, I'm very honest with the kids about this. I'll say, you know, I like you. You're a great kid, but I'm not going to lie for you to coaches. You know, if you're not holding up what you need to do in the classroom, if I'm asked about you, I'm obligated to tell the truth to those coaches. You know, we're an NCAA certified scouting service, so we have college coaches who, you know, are constantly contacting us for info on kids. And, hey, what do you know about this kid? Hey, what do you know about dad? I've heard dad's crazy. What do you know about his grades? And I don't lie about it, honestly. Like, I really, you know, the best way to go about it is to stay as neutral as possible and, you know, tell the truth. You know, you have to, because the basketball industry is a lot smaller than people realize. So it really doesn't take a lot for you to get a bad name if you get wrapped up in you know, lying about kids, or we're trying to push kids into certain schools. Because like you said, I'm a Temple fan. Like, I'm going to try and push these kids to Temple. I mean, it's a really good way to just turn your name off to other college coaches who potentially would be clients of yours, or who, you know, respect what you do. And we talk to a ton of college coaches. I think even more college coaches use our database and the information that we provide just online, because it's easy. They could just go on and, you know, go to Google and search in player X's name, and we have a profile, a picture, combine measurements on them all. And that's pretty much all you need outside of a contact number. But, you know, if they're really interested in the kid, they'll contact us for the stuff that you can't see on a player profile, like, you know, the academics, or, you know, what's this kid's personality like? Is he a good kid? Is he a jerk? How's he on social media?
And the other thing too with you guys is you run more dead period events than most other services. So like, for coaches, that intel of like somebody they're recruiting, well, how did they play at your event when there weren't coaches watching, right? When there were only media, like I remember that being a big deal when we'd run dead period stuff at Elevate Hoops. Like, we would get coaches calling us the next week to be like, you know, how did so-and-so play when nobody was there, or exactly, just in front of parents?
Yeah, that's 100%.
And like, it's hard, right? Because I think college coaches are some guys are odd ducks, and I was trying to be one of those guys too, and you have your little ticks, but like, they want to hear like really intricate things sometimes. And, you know, maybe you didn't see something that they saw. I always think about that, because like, I thought college coaches were really amusing sometimes.
Well, sometimes when they really like a kid, they almost try and like steer you to answer what they want to hear. They're almost like, oh, yeah, how did player Y play at your tournament? And I'll be like, honestly, like, he got thrown out of a game. He was a jerk, you know, he got teed up, you know, he was just not a good teammate. And they'll be like, nah, no way, man. Like, he's not a bad kid, man. And I'm like, I'm just telling you what I saw, coach.
And you can tell too, if the kid is like the assistant's guy, and like, maybe the head coach doesn't love him, you know, and you got to frame it so like, he can take it to the head coach and be like, man, I talked to Eric for Future 150. And he said that, you know, Kenny Jones was the best player on the court this weekend, when the coach is like, yeah, you know, I saw him. He didn't shoot it great. I'm not a big fan.
And if they try and frame it a certain way, like an assistant, it's almost like, all right, if you really want me to endorse it, I can half endorse it, but it's going to be your job, and you're the one that's going to take the hit for it if that's how you really feel about this kid. I'm trying to be honest with you, but if you need that positive report to go take back to your, you know, your head man in charge, then I guess I can help kind of endorse it, but it's going to be you know your butt on the line when you recruit him and he's a jerk and, you know, he transfers after a year.
What's your favorite war story you've heard on the grassroots scene? I mean, we always find this interesting, and you've got ears everywhere, so I'm waiting on this.
Honestly, there's not a single one that comes to mind. There's so many different. When I first got into this, I mean, obviously you hear certain stories about, you know, AAU and, you know, the recruiting world. But I really had no idea just how crazy it is, you know, between, you know, the AAU coaches and the programs and some of the things you hear between college coaches. And obviously, as we all know, there's the FBI investigation. The feds have been brought in to try and regulate what's going on in the world of prep basketball, which we know is insane. I mean, I try to explain it to people who aren't really on the inside, and it's like nothing that I've ever really experienced. So I can't really put my finger on one specific story, but every time that I've thought I've heard or seen it all, there's something that comes
something
up
a little more
2 weeks later that I'm like, wow, that's absolutely incredible. I really did think that nothing would surprise me in youth basketball. And it's not even just at the high school level. Like, you know, the middle school level is just as crazy. And the parents get crazier the younger the kids are. Like, our hardest,
oh my God.
Probably at our tournaments, the hardest people to control are our sixth grade division parents, which is the youngest we do.
It's amazing, right? Like, so at Elevate Hoops, we run a youth league called Proving Ground, and it's really, really talented. And the first year we did it, I just remember thinking, like, why are so many parents, like, coming up to me screaming it about the refs? Like, why are officials telling me we got to throw parents out? This doesn't happen at any, I mean, occasionally it happens, you know, at a high school event. But, like, young kids bring more parents with them. The parents sit right on the floor. Everybody at that age thinks that their kid's the best player in the gym. It is absolutely fascinating to watch 6th and 7th and 8th graders in comparison to 10th and 11th graders. It's totally different. And some of the stuff is absolutely incredible that you hear. Like, I remember we would – so our stops were like Philly, somewhere in New York. We had a Jersey stop. We had a Maryland stop, like a D.C. stop. And every single time, teams from out of state would come up and scream that we needed to get refs that weren't from the area because refs, for some reason, cheated for the teams in the area. And what I wanted to tell parents was, like, first of all these refs are pretty terrible, and they just want to get paid their money and leave. They don't really care who wins. They don't want there to be an incident, and they just want the games to end on time. They have no dog in any fight. In fact, I would rather they cared because maybe they'd take their job a little bit more seriously instead of just trying to get cash and walk out of the gym. But, like, oh my gosh, I think I have nightmares thinking about talking to parents about officials and like trying to get parents off the court because they're so furious.
I mean,
that's
definitely one of the downsides to the job. I don't look forward to our tournament weekends a lot because I always know that I'm going to have an issue. I mean, there's one time that just this conversation has jogged my memory a little bit. And I'm glad it did because I don't know if I would have remembered this again. But there was probably a top 50 player in the country maybe 4 years ago, a kid from down south. And in the middle of one of his games, like he was, I think it was his 17 and under season. I mean, he was playing like awful basketball. Like he was just having like a terrible, terrible game. And his mom was just relentless in the stands, like yelling at him, like, you know, to play better, to just be better. I can't believe you like missed that shot. I can't believe you did this. And it was like, I hear that a lot. So like, to me, it was like, I could tune it out. But it got to a boiling point at some point in the second half where mom literally came out of the stands and went onto the court and drug her son off the court. Like in the middle of like, it wasn't a timeout. It wasn't halftime. Like it wasn't the end of a game, like the handshake line. It was literally just like midpoint second half, like, in a half court set, and she just went on the court, like grabbed him by his jersey and just completely drug him off. And coach was, I don't think the coach was that surprised, which was crazy because it just made me realize that this probably wasn't the first time that it had happened. He was just like, so and so, get in the game. I was like, does this really happen that often to you?
I have a similar, and it's funny, like with AAU coaches too. And when we talked to Bobby Jordan, you know, who's the 16 and under coach at team final. We talked a lot about like why AAU coaches choose this lifestyle because you do end up with, you know, you can't get kids to practice and a lot of teams do a great job. So I don't mean to be negative, but I remember one of the first couple events I worked at Hoop Group when I was still in college was Southern Jam Fest, and it was humongous. Obviously, down at Boo Williams, they had so many teams. And I remember it was the year that, like, James Michael McAdoo was a senior, or going to be a senior on Boo Williams with, like, Dorian Finney-Smith, and then Quinn Cook was on DC Assault, and they had a player named Jordan Goodman, who I'm sure you remember. But a lot of people don't know how good Jordan was as, like, a 9th and 10th grader. And I remember in the middle of the game, I can't remember who was coaching DC Assault at the time, but I remember in the middle of the game, the guy just hockey subbed Jordan Goodman out against Boo Williams. They were getting killed in like the semifinals of the Elite Eight. And Goodman was just sitting on the side, like refusing to sit on the bench. And at one point in the middle of the second half, when the game was like almost out of hand, he just stands up, says, F this, and subs himself into the game, pulls just another like random guy off the team. And like this team was like him, like Quinn Cook, you know, like really good players. And just pulls somebody out and hockey subs himself in. And the refs just let it happen. Like, nobody said anything. Like, just not one person said something as Jordan Goodman just subbed himself back in the game. And I often do sometimes think that officials and, like, event operators are kind of like, okay, these are really high-profile players and we need them to play because we need media coverage. And that is a problem, I think. But I think it's better now. And I do remember that Jordan Goodman was just, you know, a little bit different, you know, and but I mean, man, the stuff, when you see that stuff, you're just kind of like, what is going on here? Like, what's going on in this team with this team? Like, what's going on with this player? Like, what's going on in his mind? But he just, I remember just stood up, looked at the crowd, said, F this, and just walked right on back on the court.
Yeah, if there's one thing that I regret from when I started doing this, I guess 7 or 8 years ago now, I wish I would have documented, like, all the crazy stories between like college coaches,
write kids. A Bible.
I could write a New York Times bestseller, like probably.
Oh, we talk about
over.
That all the
like,
time.
We might do it.
Stories. I mean, someone needs to do it. And I try to encourage, you know, some guys who I, you know, work around who know as much or more than I do to say like, look, there is a ton of money in this. If we could just compile all the stories as one and just put it out there.
And, like, one of the things is, so, like, you know, obviously George Doman wrote Play Their Hearts Out about Demetrius Walker and kind of, like, the rise from, like, the youth scene to the high school scene. But he kind of – and I thought the book was actually a decent representation. You know, it's certainly not every AAU coach or every player who's highly ranked. But the one thing that he didn't do in the book, I thought, was, like, there are so many scenarios that are just so funny. And they aren't, like, shake your head, like, this is embarrassing. Like, there are just really funny moments. Like, just that people don't get. And if you're not in it every day and you don't watch, like, sometimes how AAU coaches work the refs and, like, the exchanges between refs and coaches or, like, you know, the guy who's wearing a backpack and a GoPro on his head because he wants to film. Like, those things are absolutely hilarious. And they're just kind of, like, you know, quirks of the industry. And so I feel like people just, they don't realize how funny it is, especially when you get to meet and like kids and coaches who have been doing it a long time. Like, they're amusing and like it makes the job, like you said, there is kind of like the dread of like, man, I'm going to have to police parents and coaches this week. But there also is the like, I get to watch pretty good basketball and I get to see like a lot of funny things. Like, I remember it was just like no day was the same, like no matter what, it just was never the same. Something always happened where you're at the hotel at the end of the night, you know. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. Maybe you're having a beer to unwind and you're sitting there with your staff being like, can you believe what so-and-so did today? How nuts is that?
Oh,
guy?
Yeah. It's never ending. And if I could plug one thing for you guys, if you've followed or not followed AAU Bingo, that account is so fantastic. And it reminds me so much of just like working events that it's like my guilty pleasure account.
So we follow, so I think Smalls and I both follow that. And especially when you're in an event, when you're in an event operator role, not sure why I can't talk. I remember looking at it and being like, man, I hope we never show up on here because you want your events to be on a better level, right? And I remember last year at halftime of a game in Indianapolis, we had a ref who was pretty good. Like, he was a Missouri Valley ref and he was reffing couple games in a row and then moving courts and continuing to ref. So it, you know, it looked like obviously he wasn't on the same court, but he was a really good official. And at like the 10 PM set, right at the end of a live period event, there was a late timeout and it was two teams. It was a close game and they called back-to-back timeouts. And he was literally laying in between the courts with a towel over his head before he refed the last like 3.5 seconds of the game, which ended up going to overtime because the kid made a big shot. But like, I remember like, man, this dude's not even going to be able to walk out of here. And I was like praying that nobody took a picture of it and sent it to AAU Bingo. Cause that you just don't really like, it's funny if it's not your event, you know, and people don't.
I had a guy at the end of one of our tournaments this past year. I think it was like, I guess it was like a late Saturday night tip. And it was like the start of bracket play. And as you know, like once bracket play starts, like everything gets significantly crazier because it's when you go home.
Oh yeah. Much yeah, more serious.
So I had a coach who it was like a back and forth game, and it was the second half, and I guess his wife was there and they had a newborn, and I don't know if she was just trying to go home, but she came over and passed off the newborn to him, who was asleep, and he coached the rest of the game with the newborn on his shoulder as he's storming up and down the sidelines screaming at kids. Like the kid, it was amazing because the baby didn't wake up, but like his head is jerking all over the place, and like the coach is screaming at the ref, like pacing the sidelines. I could not look away. It was like one of the most fantastic things I'd ever seen.
So we have all this craziness, and you guys are going back and forth about different stories and times. I want to bring it back a little bit to the, you mentioned the FBI coming in, obviously the NCAA being looked at, AU basketball. I just want to know, what's the one change you would make to maybe improve, whether it's recruiting or the AU basketball scene? Or do you have any changes, or do you think it just kind of leads its own?
I mean, that's tough. AAU is such like a, it's prep basketball itself is just like a Wild West, like, you know, there's no real way to regulate it because people are always going to find a loophole. I think the thing is there's a market for these kids. And obviously like now that it's been put into the mainstream media, like you can't say that, you know, this player isn't worth 100,000 or this player isn't worth 200,000, because clearly some of these schools were willing to pay them for it. So it's like, I almost feel like the only way to stop certain things from happening is to just eliminate the rules against it and let it be almost like an open market where, okay, this school wants to pay, you know, X amount of money for this kid. I mean, he's super talented. I mean, younger professionals in other sports are getting paid at that, you know, at that level, and they're making the universities, you know, so much money that it's a crazy system. But
I think at least like let them market themselves, or let a brand say, hey, I'm a Nike and I want to market this kid. Let him market his name and let him make some money off of that way.
And
that could be an easy solution. I don't think it hurts anyone.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
And,
but also, like,
go ahead. No, they try to say that, you know, oh, well, you know, if you do it that way, the big schools with all the money are going to get the top kid. Well, that's the way it is.
We're going to get it anyway.
That's the way it's always going to be. You're not going to fix it to level the playing field of where Utah State's going to get kids over Duke. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Alcorn State, like you mentioned earlier, is not going to get the number one player in the nation. It's just not going to happen. So you might as well just, you know, massage it in a sense.
I do think allowing kids to market themselves is the biggest deal. Like, I don't necessarily, I guess I'm not like a full, like, give each school a salary cap kind of guy. But I really am like, man, if I'm trying to think of a good example. I remember when Andrew Wiggins was going to college, people were talking about maybe he was going to go to the D League because Adidas offered him like $100 million contract or something. And I don't know if that was ever true. I know that was reported. And at that point, like, if he went to college, like, I don't understand why, because, like, turning down that level of cash is really hard. But at the same time, like, why can't Adidas say, like, look, we want to invest in Andrew Wiggins, like, he's going to an Adidas school, like, he should be able to get that money. It's not fair in a world where, like, yes, you're going to make a lot of money, but your ability to earn is finite, right? Like, you can't play basketball for 45 years. It's just not possible.
As long as you can regulate like, you can't have it just be Wild West, like Nike and Adidas. As long as you can regulate that, it will be okay.
But at the same time, though, too, like, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I'm just not, this is, like, the NCAA makes all this money, right? Like, we hear about these TV deals. One, I don't know where that money goes. I'm supposedly back to schools, but every single school athletic department's reporting a loss. So, like, something doesn't add up to me. And then, like, It's just like, it's like the only industry in the entire world where like you're not able to capitalize on your skill and ability. Like you have to like go through this first. And I get it. Like 99% of the kids are never going to make that type of money. But in life, like 99% of people aren't going to make $100 million. And the people that are able to do it, that nothing stops them from doing it. So I just don't get why the NCAA is so against stuff like that. Like, and I'm not saying $100 million for Andrew Wiggins is right. I just mean like coaches can't even like give players rides, or like a kid comes to you and he's like, hey, I want to take my girlfriend to Applebee's for dinner. And like, you know, the kid's poor. Like an assistant coach is not allowed to give that player $25. Like, are we really like splitting hairs over $20 to $30? Like it's supposed to be about the kids' lives being better. And that's where I think this gets really blurred. And that's where like the NCAA really annoys me, because like they aren't able to like peel back the layers and be like, okay, this should be allowed and this shouldn't be allowed. It's just always an all or nothing thing. And I just think that's so incorrect.
And you have to take into account, you know, the injury risks for some of these guys too. I mean, a guy like Harry Giles, you know, by the time he's out of high school, you know, his draft stock is in question because of his knee injuries. But I mean, when he's healthy, he's, you know, the number one player in the country, and it's not close. So it's like, if he's able to make money as a 15 or 16 year old, you know, before certain things happen, I mean, I think he absolutely was entitled to that. You know what I mean? Like,
with the amount of time that like, that now, like when, before Nike was involved in USA Basketball, I'm not sure if that's going to be the case anymore, but like, now Nike's, you know, like Rivals is putting big pictures of Harry Giles on their site and a Nike USA Basketball warm-up. Like somebody's getting clicks because of that and making money because of that. And so like, it's unfair that Harry is a guy that is going to generate headlines and can't see any money, especially with what you said. Like he's obviously a special case because he's had three knee surgeries already. And for him, he was drafted in the first round, and hopefully he's able to be successful because he's a special talent and like he's going to get some money. But yeah, like, I mean, Harry probably, I mean, his name was probably worth $30 to $40 million as a junior in high school when his team was playing in the Peach Jam Finals on ESPN. Because, like, he was the draw.
And I think there's a bad rap for a lot of kids and families. You know, the common thing that everyone wants to say is, oh, well, man, these families, you know, they're from bad areas and they want the quick money. And it's like, hey, if my kid's an elite talent who's worth $30 million, I want my kid and my family to have that money. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. It's not about a demographic, or, you know, it's always painted as, you know, the inner city kids and the families who need the money. But it's like, if you're that talented and that's what the market says you're worth, then that's what you're worth. And that's, if you're making money for, you know, your school or your university, I mean, you should get your cut of the pie. I mean, while your stock is hot.
Right. So like that's, and we, Smalls and I talk about, like, we don't want to talk about LeVar Ball a ton. And like, I'm a pro, like, I think LeVar Ball is annoying sometimes, but I think he's really good at marketing himself. And I think he's like, obviously Lonzo has a bad game the other night and he's on First Take the next day, you know, like talking about it, screaming about it with Stephen A. Smith. Like, I don't have a problem with what he's doing. Like, I think it's annoying, and I think like it sucks a little bit for Lonzo because, you know, there's so much pressure on him. But I mean, man, like, we live in a capitalist society. Like, maybe he could do it a better way, but like, if he thinks he can take LaMelo out of school and they can make much more money with LaMelo not being an amateur, then I can't argue with that. And maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see an issue with that. I really don't. And I know people say like, oh, you're hurting a kid. Like, maybe you are, but what if you make $30 million?
Yeah, like, exactly. People want LaMelo. Oh, why do you take him out of high school? Make him go to college, get an education. Well, he's going to be a basketball player, let's be honest. And he's going to make way more money doing that than probably anything else he would have done academically. So I don't see anything wrong with it. He's got a path for his kids. He's allowed to raise his kids the way he wants.
I mean, LaMelo Ball has 2.7 million Instagram followers.
He already has.
He's 15 years old.
He's a celebrity already. And the bad narrative, or the bad dad narrative, is not true. I mean, LaVar is a present father who is doing everything in his power to help his kids achieve their dreams and make the most money they can make. And like you said, sure, it's too much. Like, I really don't prefer to wake up and turn on SportsCenter and see him rocking the the big baller brand and dancing or on WWE or it, all that crazy stuff. But I mean, you can't knock him for, you know, doing what's best for his family and his kids. I mean, I'll give him that credit.
The tough part about LeVar, and then we'll go to one more question and then segments, but like the tough part about LeVar is that like his family is pretty stable, you know, like they seem to come from a good home. All three of his kids are tremendously respectful to everybody I've ever heard them talk to. You know what I mean? It's never, oh, like Lonzo said, Steve Alford's a terrible coach. I mean, he never does that. He just goes out and plays and he wins. Like he never says things like, he doesn't say like, oh, who's Patrick Beverly? Like he just takes his licks and goes and plays the next day. So like, I do think that obviously like we're in a society now where people do want to get clicks and like they do want people to watch and they want people to have opinions. But you know, the LeVar Ball thing's interesting because what's the difference between LaMelo Ball and like a child actor? You know, at this point, they're all celebrities. You know, what's the difference between LaMelo and like a Justin Bieber type when he's making music at 17 or 18? Like there really isn't one, but one's allowed to make a ton of money and get himself set for life. And one's getting criticized because he's probably not going to go to UCLA now. And so I just don't think that's right. But I mean, that's a story for another day. I could talk about it for 2 hours. But Eric, getting back to you, what are your ultimate career goals now and kind of how have they changed over the last couple of years?
That's a great question. I'll never forget because it's really funny, specifically speaking with you on this, but I remember at, I think it was Reebok camp, like 4-ish years ago, Rob, I was talking to Rob Engerman and Rob was like, well, what's your angle? Cause everybody has an angle. Apparently everybody's got an angle who's in this. And I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, I really don't probably have an true angle. Like I love evaluating kids. I love, you know, following their journeys and scouting and traveling and, you know, seeing who the next, you know, stud's going to be. I mean, that's something that I've always wanted to do. I mean, it really honestly was my dream, you know, my dream job since I was probably in, you know, seventh or eighth grade. And I knew that I was never gonna make it to the NBA as a player, obviously. But, you know, my whole mindset was, you know, if I work hard enough, you know, maybe I'll be lucky enough to be around these kids who can see that dream through and, you know, get to watch some of these insanely talented, you know, guys when they're, you know, seventh grade all the way up through 12th grade. And, you know, obviously I wasn't really thinking about, you know, the youth, you know, middle school coverage at the time, more of like the senior and junior year and that stuff. But that's kind of what it's evolved into for me. So I don't really know. I mean, I can't tell you that I would say no to, you know, if I ever was offered a, you know, a position as, you know, an NBA scout or something like that, I would take it as it came. But, you know, I'm pretty happy right now. I mean, I love, you know, the brand that we have. We're going to drop a brand new website in January that's, I think, really going to create a lot of great buzz for our brand and take us to the next level. So there's a lot of good things going for us right now, and I'm happy, and I like the direction, and my boss, you know, Jason, is happy with the direction we're going. So I'm just, you know, it's cliche, but, you know, I think I'm blessed to be able to, you know, do what I love, and, you know, kind of ride this whole thing out and just see where the journey goes. I mean, I'm not trying to be complacent. I'm just going to keep riding the wave.
All right, cool. So we're going to go into segments. The first one is one we haven't done before, but we're going to start doing it with any kind of scout or evaluator we have on. And we call these Rothsteins, named after our friend of the program, John Rothstein. So I'm going to give you a player, and you have to answer how John would compare them. So much blank in blank. So we've got five players. The first one, Eric, is Zion Williamson.
Man, so much. Can I say multiple players?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. John would.
Yeah, exactly. I would say
John would fire off like 10 tweets.
Exactly. I would say probably a mix between Charles Barkley, Larry Johnson, a little bit of Sean Kemp, and a little bit of the LeBron explosiveness. I mean, he's such a unique player. I mean, it's hard to really pinpoint one guy, honestly.
Yeah, I would have gone with I think I would have gone with Larry Johnson. I don't think he handles it quite as good as Charles Barkley, but I never saw Charles Barkley as a 17-year-old, yeah. So I don't know. But Zion, it's gonna be, he's the most interesting guy in high school basketball because he's 6'5", he's 270 pounds, and he is an absolute physical freak. So I'm very excited to see what happens.
He could be
with
an
Zion.
NFL player if his basketball doesn't work out. He totally has
it. Yeah, I always wonder with guys like him, like, is it, people are always like, oh, he'll lose weight, but like, does he, like, what happens to his body? Is like he better at 230 than he is at 265? I don't know. I mean, I guess conventional wisdom is yes, but he's so explosive and such an amazing leaper, and like his motor is so good already. Like, maybe Zion's one of the guys that you just don't mess with.
He's a freak. Like, this he's a freak of Nate.
He's just different. Okay, next one, Romeo Langford.
So much Kentavious Caldwell Pope.
Oh, really? I was gonna. Okay, ooh, that's a good like one, actually.
That a lot.
Romeo is probably my favorite, other than RJ Barrett. I'm very, very high on Romeo. I think he has every skill for a big wing. I kind of think a little bit of, I don't know, Smalls. I think Paul Pierce a little bit.
Oh, I like that one.
In terms of his ability to be really smooth.
I can see that.
All right, next one, Texas freshman this year, Mo Bamba.
You give me these difficult ones.
Yeah, it's not fun if it's like somebody that easily can
get Mo. I'm going to say a mix of Nerlens Noel and Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, it's got to be Rudy, even though they are different, just because the length is
crazy.
So
incredible.
Like, it's insane.
Yeah, it's insane.
Like, Mo Bamba to me, if he proves that he can screen and dive and make an elbow jump shot, he's the very under the radar, like, number one pick guy, because those guys are just so damn valuable from a defensive standpoint. But I'm really excited. Next one, and I think you're going to have a good one for this guy, Michael Porter.
For me, I think it's pretty easy. I see Durant.
Real? Oh, really? I was going to say I've heard a lot of Tracy McGrady.
I think he's a lot more skilled than Tracy McGrady was. You know what I mean? I didn't get to see McGrady at the high school level.
That's big
but
time. That's
Michael
bold.
is so incredibly skilled, and I believe he was still growing as of like the end of last year. I think he's up to a legit 6'10". Literally can play on the perimeter. I mean, obviously, a Durant comparison is a really high comparison and holding him in high regard, but for his size and his ability level, I mean, the ceiling is the roof, honestly.
There you go. Last one, probably early college player of the year favorite, but a different kind of player, Miles Bridges.
I'm gonna keep it with Michigan State, say Draymond-ish.
Yeah, I could see that. And he's going to play a lot of four this year for them, I hope. I hope Tom Izzo does that. Miles is an interesting candidate. And this year's draft seems pretty deep. Are you a Marvin Bagley or Luka Doncic or Michael Porter number one overall guy if you were picking today?
Michael Porter, obviously, right?
Yeah, if you can get Durant, you got to take
him. If he's way more skilled than Tracy McGrady, and he's Kevin Durant.
He is. I mean, I think he's going to put up crazy numbers at Missouri, obviously, because he kind of has to. Bagley is special, too. I mean, I haven't obviously seen Doncic, like, in person. I've seen a lot of what he's done, you know, at the European, you know, at the highest level of European basketball as an 18-year-old. I'd probably still put him behind Bagley and Porter. But I think it depends on fit for whoever has that first pick. I mean, can you really go wrong with Porter or Bagley? I mean, those are two cornerstones.
I wonder if it's going to come down to Doncic probably has the highest floor. Porter might be ready to score the most right away, and Bagley probably is the, if he's as good as he can be, I mean, he's one of the best players in the NBA, I think. And so, like, that's why I wonder with those three. I think you're right. It depends on who gets the pick. Like, if let's just say Brooklyn, that pick for Cleveland turns into the number one pick, and, like, LeBron stays, well, like, maybe you take Porter, or maybe you take Doncic, or you take Porter. I'm not sure, because those guys might be ready to play and win a title faster than Marvin Bagley might be.
But, I mean,
but five or 8 years down the road, it might hurt.
I mean, the top of this draft, I mean, if you're in that top, you know, that top three, I mean, are you really going to lose?
Yeah, and like, what if Mo Bamba at Texas, you know, shows up with like 16 and 12 and 3.5 blocks a game on 65% shooting? Then you're just like, okay, maybe this is Dwight Howard. Maybe he's better than Dwight Howard. And that's obviously a very huge comparison to put on a guy who hasn't played basketball that long. But this is going to be a really interesting season. So we're going to go into city review. I'm actually going to, on the fly, change the city review based on something you said. So you worked in Charleston, South Carolina. I worked in Charleston, South Carolina. Smalls has never been there. So why don't you tell us, for a city review, where are we going if we come down, if we go for a weekend in Charleston, but we're going to make it a guy's weekend, no significant others? Where are you taking us?
Oh, man. Charleston, first of all, Charleston's my favorite city in the country. I'm a little biased because I lived there for a little bit, but it's fantastic. It's
pretty fantastic.
It is. It's ever changing. So, I mean, I'm not really privy to like what has popped up in the past few months. I really love, you know, anywhere on Folly Beach is fun. I'm a beach guy. But if we're going downtown, Bay Street Beer Garden, my buddy works there.
That's a good place. Great place to watch football.
Yeah. One of my best friends from high school works there. And a guy I went to high school with is part of the ownership there. So that's definitely somewhere I'm going to plug. I used to work at Pugin's Porch. So I'll give them a little bit of a shout out if you're looking for some low country cooking downtown. Check them out.
How are the tips on Queen Street down there, Eric? You know, with Pugin's Porch and 82 Queen and Husk being all right in a row. There's a lot of money walking down there and buying meals.
Yeah, 100%. Well, you know, I started out, I was grinding as a busboy to start. So, like, wasn't a whole lot of tip money there, but I was just trying to get by. That's when I was really trying to start getting into the whole, you know, basketball things. But once you're a server or a bartender in that city, I mean, you're making a good amount of money. I mean, it's probably a top three or four, you know, tourist city and probably on the planet. Honestly, it's fantastic.
What kind of beers are we drinking? Hold on, Tyler. This is important. This is very important for me. Are we drinking like Shandy's? What are we drinking? IPA? I don't know.
Honestly, like, you could get whatever there. I mean, I don't know if you're an IPA guy. I mean, I'm
a big IPA guy.
Yeah, I drink anything. I'll drink the Shandy's. I mean, I'm always going to plug. I'm from Pottsville, PA, so homie Yingling Beer. I'm always going to try and plug you.
Whoa. Home of Nick Schlitzer, correct?
Nick Schlitzer, yeah. Nick Schlitzer's one of my buddies, great family friend. Super, super talented basketball player. Obviously, he's overseas playing right now. But, yeah, I know Nick very well.
Eric, what about bars after we go have a good meal? Because Charleston, you're right, is one of the most unbelievable food cities in the country in terms of the quality of restaurants on King Street. You're a Folly Beach guy. I was more of a Sullivan's Island guy. Loved the vibe over there. You know, the goal in life is to make enough money to retire over there and eat at the Obstinate Daughter every day. So I'll plug my favorite restaurant in the world. But after we're getting a good meal, where are we going on King? I'll start. If it was just guys, probably Cocktail Club, because there's going to be a lot of potential for a fun start to the night with some good drinks and some good, I would say, some good sights to see at Cocktail Club.
Yeah. What did I like recently? I don't know if you've been to Indaco on King.
I have been.
That's a solid spot. That wasn't there when I was living there. I like that as kind of like an, you know, more of like a chill. Now that I'm out of like the rage party phase of my life, that's more of like the upscale, try to be an adult and professional. That's probably somewhere where I'd go.
How about you've got to be a star. You had to have been a Stars roof deck guy when you were living there.
I was an AC's guy.
Oh man. Okay. Like, AC's is good. But see, now people don't think Charleston probably has a lot of dive bars, but AC's are like the dollar. Like, those are bars you can actually go drink for pretty cheap there.
Oh yeah. And honestly, the brunch was fantastic too. I mean, I am so low maintenance, just where I grew up, you know, coal region, Pennsylvania, you know, you got bars and churches. That's pretty much all you got in these small towns. So like, when I moved there, I was, you know, far from, you know, the high class, you know, go to these upscale places. I mean, I was going to Mellow Mushroom and doing college football Saturdays and going, you know, just anywhere, man. I was, it was a different phase of my life, but there's no shortage of places in that city. And I mean,
King Street honestly looks like a movie set for people that haven't been there. When I was coaching at College of Charleston, I constantly wondered how students at CFC ever got any work done, because it's like you're in a paradise. But I mean, I'm with you, Eric. One of the best cities in the world, like just in terms of work-life balance and pace and what you can do. And if you love the beach, like you got three beaches within, you know, 15 minutes of pretty much wherever you live, with Sullivan, Folly, and Isle of Palms, and just a place I try to get back to at least once a year when you really want to relax.
Yeah, the people are nice. It's a little different from up here. I mean, the people are genuinely nice in the South.
Eric, we're on the same level. I'm a huge dive bar guy, so I got to ask you. I also pride myself on finding dive bar food. What's the one like dive bar food item you're going to get for me when we go hang out in Charleston?
Oh, wow, that's tough. I don't think I never really ate when I would drink.
Oh, man. Well, I got
you couldn't afford, you can't, Smalls, you can't afford it down there. You know,
exactly.
Okay. I guess I'm thinking
if you're talking like an app, maybe just
even a meal guy. I'm an app guy. You can just buy me apps, babe.
Yeah. So, one thing that I was introduced to that I never had down there, until I was down there, was either the fried green tomatoes or the fried gator.
Yes. Gator. That's what I'm talking gator about. That's what I needed from you.
Fried green tomatoes at Pugin's Porch, pretty good. 82 Queen, too. You can get grits with everything. That's apparently an app or a side dish, you know. Just grits, like cheese grits. But, all right, Smalls, we got to do 10 touches. Intro it for us, baby.
All right, Eric, we got 10 touches. This is like our semi-rapid-fire segment. We give you, you know, question after question, 10 questions. You got 30-second answers to us. We'll probably go a little longer, so no big deal. You don't have to abide by it. But, Tyler, why don't you start us off?
All right, Eric, who's the funniest player you've ever interviewed?
Either probably some combination of Terrence Ferguson, De'Aaron Fox, and Corey Sanders.
Yeah, Corey Sanders, wild interview.
That dude is that a Rossi answer? That was just the combo of three dudes.
All right, who had the best single game AAU performance you've ever seen?
That's so hard. Maybe Scal Labissiere. I've seen him do some pretty ridiculous things. Or Tyus Jones. Tyus Jones has done some, he's had some monster games.
All right. What's the worst travel experience you've ever had?
Probably this year. Going to one of our Dallas tournaments. The Dallas airport closed like three separate times while we were in air, while we were circling the airport. We almost ran out of fuel, so we had to fly to Houston, where we were on the ground for 2 hours, and then we had to fly back to Dallas. So I left Philly at noon. I was supposed to land at 3, and I ended up landing at like 10:30 p.m.
And then you got to start the event. You got to do all the stuff for the event. The event starts at 8 a.m. the next day, right?
Well, it started Friday night, and I missed the first night. Thankfully, I had obviously my boss and one of my coworkers there. But yeah, I missed Friday night.
What's the craziest event you've ever covered?
when I was probably living in Nashville, there was a middle school event that I attended that there was the event operator was really hyping the crowd up, and it got really, really crazy, and somebody drove an Escalade through the front doors of the middle school.
Are you serious?
That's real. That is 100% real life. Marvin Bagley was there as an eighth grader.
See, that's the stuff that has to go in the book, because like that's just, I mean, it's just like inconceivable for people that aren't in the business to understand that things like that happen.
Yeah, like, and it really wasn't like crazy. Like some people were just like, oh, like, okay,
there's an Escalade. Like,
yeah, there's an Escalade that's right near the court, and there's like all these future five-star prospects just running around as middle schoolers not blinking an eye.
What is your favorite book and TV show?
favorite book would be Fall River Dreams about Chris Herring when he was in high school. I love that book.
I also own that book.
Great book. TV show, I would probably say The Wire.
Man, Harry made me on that show.
Here you go. Now he's going to go off track. He's going to lose his mind.
No, I'm not. You're up, Smalls. You're up.
Best AU matchup you've ever seen?
Probably Andrew Wiggins versus Julius Randle at Peach Jam.
I like that. Tyler, are you okay over there? Are you thinking about The Wire? You're crying inside a little bit?
I can talk about Stringer Bell for a good while. We could talk about the basketball scene in season one, Prop Joe versus Avon, East versus West Baltimore.
Who's the one player you saw and you just knew right away he was a guy?
Marvin Bagley as an eighth grader. Right. Best I've ever covered since I've been in this.
All right. Best food you've ever eaten in a hospitality room? Talk about what a hospitality room is for our listeners who are stupid.
Okay, so the hospitality rooms are at different events, and, you know, they kind of serve you, depending on what the event is, whether it's, you know, lunch, dinner, snack food. There's really big differences between where you go and how legit the hospitality rooms are. I'm trying to think what hospitality room has really been impressive. I always liked what NBA Camp did. They always did a pretty good job on the hospitality room there. And then obviously you got like the hybrid interview rooms as well. So you can snack and interview some guys and talk to the kids. So
I always heard coaches were always really happy about, like, somewhere used to do Chick-fil-A, and like you'd hear it. They'd come to your events where you didn't have a hospitality room and they'd be like, well, so-and-so had Chick-fil-A. And we're like, yeah, so-and-so has a $800 million sneaker budget for their events.
Hey, I'll take an Uncrustable. I'll take an Uncrustable if it's offered. I mean, free food that I don't have to buy, I'm cool with.
Uncrustable, yeah. I like it. What city produces the best basketball town in the country?
It changes, probably. It's depends on cycles.
Eric, Houston, give me one.
Houston and Atlanta are both really good.
Yeah, the Southeast is really, really strong in 18 and 19.
I agree with that.
At least this time around. I think Philly is pretty strong in 19 and 20 from what I've seen.
Yeah, correct. They are.
Yeah. Philly can be a little overrated. You just got engaged. What's the best and worst thing about planning a wedding?
I got engaged in Charleston, FYI. I thought that was a 5-star move on my part.
the beach proposal is always a crowd pleaser.
It really is. You really can't go wrong unless
she said no. You still got the dive bars to go to.
I was about to say. I mean, I was a little worried about her saying no. I had to work an event like 3 days later, and my buddy was like, "Well, if she says no, at least we'll have a good Saturday night." I was like, "That's true." Best thing about planning a wedding? There is no best thing.
This guy gets it.
I think just making the invite list is really hard. There's a lot of politics involved.
Oh, man. I literally like wake up in cold sweats thinking about trying to get under the number of invites. And like, honestly, like my wife and like my mom and her mom were pretty easy to deal with. But like that and where you seat people is just so insane. It's like you're recruiting whiteboard. You're moving people around up there. Like, well, what if this person's too close to this table? Or like, what if we have to separate a friend group? And you're just like, man, I just don't care about this.
Yeah.
You know? I want to ask you guys if you'll give me a chance to go back and name drop one guy as far as like somebody who's had like a crazy AAU performance. I'd be doing the podcast a disservice if I didn't name drop Trey Jefferson from Texas Southern. I don't know how familiar either of you are with Trey Jefferson.
I mean, very familiar.
I know Trey Jefferson.
Lightning rod guard.
Ridiculous. Crazy skilled. His personality was like off the charts, but I've seen him do some pretty incredible stuff too. So I really wanted to name drop him because he's going to be so much fun this year.
I feel like he had a like 9th or 10th grade mixtape that had like 100 million views on YouTube. And it was like DeMontre Jefferson's the best guard, point, best handles in the country or something. It might have been, I think it was a Ball Is Life mixtape.
Yeah. It was like 3 years ago. Views. Unstoppable. Yeah. The most exciting player in high school basketball. Yeah.
When he was playing with Kayvon Looney on the Milwaukee Rebels, I mean, they were, you know, the type of team that you literally wanted to just follow around the country because you never knew what you were going to get. They were super talented.
All right, last segment, parting shots. I'll go first. We ask these to every guest. What is the best advice you've ever been given?
I think probably the best advice I've ever been given would be by my dad, who always said, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
And that is great advice, and that stays true for any, you know, kind of job or industry you get into. Face-to-face with your 18-year-old self, what do you tell them? Maybe what do you tell them to do different?
I think honestly what I would say is don't go to college. You don't want to pay the student loans back. Just go right into trying to be a scout where you didn't need the degree.
Oh, wow. So we have not yet. We've had some people tell us take school more seriously. We've had some people tell us don't do anything differently. But the don't go to college is an interesting one. And it kind of falls in line a little bit about what we were saying about, you know, go if you know what you want to do and you want to make money, like, you know, maybe you don't need the experience because like student loans are tough. But I hear you, Eric. And I think that's a really introspective thing to think about that. Like, if you really know what you want to do, like go give yourself a chance to do it. And so maybe those 4 years are better for you because you can put more time into it. You know, it forces you to grow up. But
yeah, it did a lot. Socially. Yeah. I had a great social experience, but I think I really learned a lot more about myself just moving away after college than actually going to college.
Yeah, I think it's hard for a kid to do that because then they have that thing called FOMO and you're like, holy shit, like I missed out on college. But I see it. If you're in the future, I get what you're doing with my question. I love it.
I mean, but part of the FOMO is like everybody always says like, oh, everybody can just go back to school. And yeah, you can. You can go back and get a degree. It is difficult to go back and like be an 18 to 22-year-old kid with a bunch of guys growing up. So like I do get that. And, you know, there are some memories in college that I wouldn't trade for the world. A lot of them were working as a manager for the Temple basketball team. Those are probably some of my best memories. But everybody's got like the party stories and like the, you know, you made friends who you still talk to and stuff. Like obviously Smalls and I are doing this and we met in college. But
we wouldn't.
I mean, I hear you. And I think it's tough at 18 years old to be decidedly different than everyone else when your whole life you hear like you got to go to college. Your junior year in high school is so important because you got to get to college and get a degree. And you know, now we know that undergrad degrees, like more and more people are getting them and they're not that important. So I think like being bold enough to be different and say like, you know what, I'm going to give this a chance. And if it doesn't work, then I'll go back and I'll get a degree in a couple years, but I want to give it a great shot. And so I appreciate that, Eric. I appreciate that honesty.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I mean, as far as a backup plan, it's obviously great to have a degree, but the student loan aspect is no fun. And I think that, you know, putting myself 4 years ahead of the curve and jumping headfirst into what I love doing. Maybe it would have worked out. Maybe it wouldn't have. I mean, I think I've gotten to pretty much where I want to get to by just doing it, you know, the way I had to do it after college. But I think that as like an 18 or 19-year-old, maybe I could be a little farther ahead in the game if I would have done it that way. But hey, you know, you never know how it would have played out. But college isn't for everyone.
Well, that is good advice, and that's it for us today. Saturday morning, we're all excited for Butch Jones to get beaten by 70 by Alabama and hopefully end the misery for us Tennessee fans. Eric, I really appreciate you know, making some time in your schedule, especially when this is your kind of like downtime, and I know you got to spend some time with your fiance because you've been traveling all over the country, but Smalls and I really appreciate you meeting and talking with us for a little while, and I think it's a different story because there are a lot of people that want to be scouts and they want to evaluate and they just don't know how to do it. And they don't know like, hey, you know, you got to dive headfirst in and you got to be okay failing. You got to be okay getting told no, because eventually someone's going to say like, I see you all the time. I see how hard you're working. Like, hey, come work for me. Because there's no shortage of good people in the basketball industry and there's no shortage of people who need good help. So like I said, really appreciate you coming on and appreciate your candor and honesty about your journey and taking some time to joke with us about some players and things like that. So thanks a lot, Eric. I mean, it's been awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate, you know, being on, and I don't know how many people who are going to listen to the pod are interested in potentially getting into this crazy wild field, but I really try to take pride in, you know, hearing out people who, you know, want to learn more and getting advice, because I know that when I was trying to get my start, good advice was hard to come by from people in the field. So my contact information is on www.future150.com, phone number, email address. If you're a aspiring scout or an event guy or whatever in basketball, if there's something I can answer for you, I'd be happy to try and help people who were in my shoes at one time.
And what's your Twitter handle, Eric? At Future150 Eric, right?
What is my Twitter handle? It might be
10,000 followers. Doesn't know his Twitter handle.
I try not to pay too much attention to it. It might be F150 Eric H.
Okay. But he's on Twitter, folks. So if anyone wants to reach out, really, really good resource and awesome
stuff. F150 Eric H is my Twitter handle.
All right. Awesome.
If you want to contact me on Twitter, you're more than welcome.
And Future 150 has events all over the country for anybody who's, you know, kids are looking to go for things. Great place to get yourself some exposure, especially if you're not in the top 150. And really good stuff for young kids as well. So thanks for taking the time, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
All right. I appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.